It always works.
It does, and it hits his emotion. Then he sees it. Then he's back. He doesn't really know it. A person should say something better about the mace. You know, basic forest. Want to make a person convinced that the tigers are really the good. See? The hardest thing is for a person to really see how it's untrue. And that the real freedom that a person has is when he's free from all these desires, when he's free from the plague of having his desires affect him, constantly being a servant to all his desires. When he's in total freedom, that's the great enjoyment. Very hard for a person to see that clearly, because certain things that occur that are constantly bombarding him and convincing him that the tigers are really the good. A lot of things. We mentioned already before about the nature of the psychic energy, how if it's not in thought, you know, it goes immediately to the other areas, and then once it goes to those areas, and that's it, can't get out. But I think another thing is the fact that everybody in the world recognizes the motives. That is a big factor. Everybody recognizes that. They see it all the time. Unless, you see, and the thing is this, that even in the area, even when you look at some people, you know, people who are considered to be very religious, very well accepted, but nevertheless you always find that no one really runs away from tithes. You know what I mean? There's no one that would turn down $1 million if it was given to them. Everybody underneath all, they are looking for that big, what do you call it, bucket of gold at the end of the rainbow. You know what I mean?
Negative.
What sense that this is really a tremendous value, and people are really convinced that this is a good thing. Of course, they won't say it openly, you know. But you'll see in the way they choose professions for their children, you know, where they guide their life, that underneath it all is this drive. They've been affected. They've all been touched by the conviction that comes from these tithers. It says a Navi had to be an usher. The Ram says, that usher, what? Yeah. I know. I mean, the Ashiris of the Gemara you quoted is the Ezeu Asher. Asameach Bechalka, that's what the Ram says. The Ram says that's what it means. Does not mean Ashiris. Does not mean Ashiris. Neither does Gibor mean a Gibor, a powerful warrior. You don't find it's in metaphorical terms. Because the word Ezeu, Gibor, Asher, and Chacham, Gibor, Asher, Chacham. Yeah. Gibor, Asher, Chacham. Three things. Gibor does not mean a powerful warrior. Navi could be a weak little guy. We have no record of Eliyahu Navi's biceps. What? Yeah, that's what it means. Poor. Eliyahu Navi was poor. So the Ashiris, the Rambam says, is the total satisfaction. Different type of Ashiris. See, Ashiris means the objective of what everybody wants to be an usher for. Because everybody feels if they're an usher, they're going to satisfy their passions, and they'll finally reach that state in which they don't need anything. Of course, it's a facade. It's really fake. It's not true. But there are some people that reach that, but not by satisfying the emotion, you see, but by conquering the emotion. That's the Ashiris of, like, by Avraham Avinu, where it says, Vayomas Avraham Zakein V'seva Teva Zakein V'Saveya. So Ramban says, wasn't he Zakein V'Saveya? He wasn't waiting for his conscious ayamim. He had no desire to see what's going to happen in the future. You know what I mean? No desire to see what's going to new things that are going to happen. Most people have this feeling: new things, waiting new events to occur, new good events that are going to really make them happy. You see, that's the thing. So he said, Avram didn't have that because he was totally satisfied. That's the level. That's what it means by an usher. Ah. And the question is. The only question I want to deal with is this, that why is it really that people are endlessly, hopelessly fooled by the tithers, you know? And it would seem that it's not that difficult for a person to really see through these tithers. You know what I mean? It would seem that it's not that difficult. Yet, nevertheless, we see that we might say a large majority of humanity is fooled. Large majority. Very, very large. That the, you can't even call, you can't even speak of a group that isn't fooled. It's just like an exception. You know, there's three groups. There's a last group you can't call a group because it's like, it's like the sun is a species. There's only one. So the thing is this. I would say, I would venture to say that, that fools. Now, just thinking about it. I think that people really see, people really start seeing this, because people, notice people say, well, money isn't everything. You know, people say that. Money isn't everything. Money can't buy happiness. You know, saying, well, you know that they really consider this to be the value. Question is why? And people, they seem to say, you know, money isn't everything, all these things, so they seem to... realize there's something missing here. You see cases of people, you know, plenty of money and they're unhappy in this, but it still doesn't convince them for some reason. Why? What's lacking? I mean, it should be, if people would see a certain thing, at least some people should really come to that conviction and really honestly believe it. Somehow or other, it's just, they could mouth it, but they can't really accept it. Things like this. That, see, we spoke about the energy, the psychic energy. The psychic energy has to have an outlet. That's why man is different than an animal, because an animal has a low amount of energy. Cow, he has enough energy to chew, and that's it. And the rest of the time, he just sits there. There's nothing more to do. But a person gets bored. Cow doesn't get bored. A person gets bored. He gets bored because he has a tremendous amount of energy to seeking satisfaction, overly proportionate amount to what he can really actually satisfy in reality. And boredom is when this energy isn't satisfied. So then he gets bored. And I think it's like this. That's true. It's true, it works that way. Then what happens is that when the person is dissatisfied, so he has to set up his fantasies in the future. Right? Okay. But the thing is, there's more than that. That's the instinct. That's the instinct of... the taiva, the instinct of the taivas, the energy of seeking taiva, is works that way. But there's another thing also. Okay, there really are two instincts in a person. There's one instinct, one part of the instinct is the instinct for taivas, and the other part is the instinct for survival. Okay, the other part is the instinct for survival. A person is an inherent instinct of man to survive. Now the thing is like this. That if the person is dissatisfied, and if the person removes the fantasies, so then he's completely in a state of pain. What happens is, it not only does it leave him in a state of pain, but it affects his instinct of survival. There would be no reason, that's right, there would be no reason for the person to continue to live. Okay? Because life is only of value. Life, people want to live, not because of life itself, but people want to live because they anticipate certain pleasures that they're going to receive out of life. If there was no pleasure out of life, no person would want to live. No person would want to live. I don't care who it is and what system it is. Any system you'll take in the world is always an anticipation of pleasure. Even if you'll take the most religious approach, that's always an anticipation of pleasure. We mentioned that already. They say in the next world, God will pay it back, this, something. There's always some anticipation of pleasure, even if they want to go through pain, but the pain is only because there's going to be something in the end. Otherwise, it's impossible. That's the energy is seeking satisfaction.
If the person's in a bad spot,
something good's going to come out of it. See? Right? Every person has to have this, this anticipation, because the anticipation is what makes life worthwhile. Right, otherwise what is he going to live for? There's nothing to live for. Tomorrow, if a person knew that there was just a black pain, black area of pain in front of him for the rest of his life, I mean, it wouldn't be worth it. There would be no, living would be impossible. The truth of the matter is that that's what happens when a person commits suicide.
Because he has no, there's no more fantasy at all, isn't it?
They decide that there's nothing more to live for. Okay? All that is ahead of them is just total pain. And then that's why they take their life. See? Now, therefore, what I want to say is like this.
Pressure.
You have to realize there's one thing that was noticed by the ancient philosophers. And it's really true today. It's a truism in human nature. That a person has a very funny thing. That is that things are measured by distance. Metaphorically, I mean. In other words, a close pleasure has a stronger impact than a faraway pleasure.
It's quicker.
You know?
Yeah.
Like if you knew that something good was going to happen to you, and you get into a sports car within the next week.
Say?
Yeah. Next year?
Take
that. That's right. Yeah. So the thing is, the distance makes a big difference on the impact of the emotions. Now, when a person is under that pressure, it means the near pain is so great that it blocks out any impact that could be received from a future pleasure. So the whole future is black. That's why they kill themselves. You know what I mean? In other words, the pain is so intense, and it's near. So that's why some people say, why did they do it if they would have waited, you know, something like that? If they would have waited, sure. But the thing is that at that moment, the pain, which was the near, was so big in the person's mind, so great.
Is that how much of the person has cancer?
Balance that a person has, you know? Certain balance. And people fail to understand other people only because they don't have that same balance. Like a person that looks at a suicidal maniac, they say, wow, right? Yeah. So how could a guy do that? So you see, for instance, sometimes you see these lovers quarrels, you know. One goes and kills the other one, and then the guy's ruined for life, you know. So you question, why did I get to this crazy? You know, you should have could have gotten over that girl. I mean, he had a whole life ahead of him, the young guy. Look at that. He killed her, and now it's finished. Think of it as that in your... See, it's all the balance. In your balance right now, it's an irrational thing to do. You see? But for him, the pain of the media was so great. You know what I mean? That killing was like nothing. In other words, you have the thing against killing, and what stops you from killing? Because you realize the repercussions. The repercussions are such that they're going to call you down, you embarrassment to your family, you know, you go down, you might get the life sentence, you know, all these things. Now, all these things that stop you is only because there's a certain impact that's received from every one of these thoughts. Like you feel police coming to my door, you feel a certain pain, you know? Now, that's an impact. That's an impact on you. You know, all these things is really what keep you
stop you
from doing it. See? But could you imagine if there was another pain that was so much greater than this? Now you'd be in a different balance already. Your scale would be balancing. Yeah, because these things would look small to you, and this thing would look great. So therefore, your action now would be in terms of new balance, a new totally new basis. You see? And that's why people say, hey, why did he do it? That was crazy. It really wasn't crazy. The people who are saying that would also do the exact same thing.
If
their balance was upset like that. But they're speaking from a different framework. You see, the framework can change. That's the thing. And to the person that's doing it at the time, it is just as if a person doing anything else. Just as if a person getting angry and breaking a dish or something, you know? Doing something, breaking something. To them, that's the exact same thing. There's no difference. That's how it works. Since a person has this energy, and the energy has to seek satisfaction, if it doesn't get any satisfaction, it's just converted into pain. A person sees it's just going to be a painful existence for the rest of his life, then life itself becomes worthless. So really, the truth of the matter is that the reason why people, a big reason why people have to follow the tithers, is a matter of the instinct of survival, too. The instinct of survival. Because they have no alternative. There is no alternative. You know what I mean? They do not have an alternative pleasure, an alternative enjoyment. You know what I mean? There's nothing else. It's only this. It'd be tantamount to suicide. Okay? The instinct of survival itself. Could you imagine? A lot of times people start feeling that way. They start feeling depressed and they start feeling, life isn't worth it, isn't it? I think the instinct of survival is already being touched on. And once that happens, that's a very powerful instinct. So you have to realize that the reason, a big reason, major reason why people could never see that the tithes are nothing is because of the... what? There's nothing else. It means suicide. It's tantamount to suicide. There's a Gemara like that. But a Gemara says that Reb Meir was Mislaitzish, with Mar Meir Rabbi Akiva. Gemara Kedushin, the end of Kedushin. Astounding Gemara. Interesting Gemara. Gemara says that Reb Meir, the same thing, what happened to Reb Meir and happened to Rabbi Akiva. I said Reb Meir was Mislaitzish B'Avri Avera. Mislaitzish B'Avri Avera means that he looked down and he left at them. People do Averas. He looked down at them, frowned at them. Jerks! Oh. Of course, Reb Meir, this was ridiculous. A person has the can have the enjoyment of Torah, greatest enjoyment, be a constant state of bliss. The guy's running after things, taivas that are so inferior, that inherently cannot offer, nearly can't even be compared in terms of what they have to offer to this type of enjoyment. The guy's like a jerk. The guy's running after a guy can take a Cadillac. He's running after a little Ford. Yeah, ridiculous scooter. Can't compare it. Can't compare it. You know what I mean? So the Gemara says that what happened was that Kadosh Baruch Hu made the Sutton look like a beautiful woman. A tree, you know? As a beautiful girl, and he started to climb the tree. And the Sutton said, Elah, if I wouldn't have heard that they call out in the Shemayim, he Zohar Merav Meir V'Terasai. He said, I would make you now a bucket of ashes. So that would have destroyed you. You know? And what's the pshat? Pshat is that, really, there's a few points in that midrash. But the main point is like this, that to be misleitzes by Avera, the mistake was that it was from his own framework. He was looking at it from his own framework. From his framework is a ridiculous thing. But if you took a look at the other guy has no choice. Not just simply he's running after others. He doesn't have that choice. The man has a choice. He has a tremendous choice. And I mean, he sees it because his whole life. But the other guy doesn't have it. In his framework, this is the only thing he could do. It's very, very difficult. It can't be misleading and just say, yeah, it's nothing. Yeah, in your framework, it's nothing. But in his framework, it's something because that's all the man has. Very difficult thing. That at that time, when a Sutton presented himself like a beautiful Isha, so what happened was that now all his libido was attached to that. See? And it was removed from the other area. Then his whole balance was upset. And he went right after the Isha.
What's he learning?
Oh, which removes him completely, removes his energy completely from the area. He was saying that it's all rationality. Anybody, pure rationality. That's why you can see, you know, exactly. It's a clear thing. So the Sutton showed it wasn't so simple rationally, because he's acting on his balance.
That's normal.
The way the things are balancing towards him, you know what I mean? But if the balance would change, then he also would get pulled in. You know what I mean? Because a person underneath it all, a person reacts to instincts. Not that simple to, instinctual forces are, or the rationality comes after the instinctual forces, but the instinctual forces are the main pull over there. That she would have stopped anyway. the Gemara says, Nashim Dait and Kalais. So, she said, Chutz Meburia. So a man had some of his talmidim start an affair with her, and she went. Yeah.
What was wrong?
No, she was wrong. Oh, what the Chazal wanted to say was when the Sutton stopped, he said, "If I hadn't heard, Yilad Shemati Zemer Mervetar Yosei." What it means is that. What it means is really. That a person, since the balance could be overpowered, could be shaken, the framework could be changed, if it's not for the Ashkenazi. That's what it means. You know what I mean? I want to show Reb Meir that he's not solely responsible for his greatness, because he's also subject to a change of balance. I didn't bring the Gemara's not exactly what I want to. What I'm trying to prove. I'm just trying to show you how the thing works on the balance, how the balance works. A person's action seems rational. Something that's ridiculous to Reb Meir really seems rational to the other guy. You know, that was his kasha. How could it be rational to this guy? You know, it's crazy. The answer is because in his framework, in his balance, that's a very rational thing to do. But I say the source of the one of the sources of the
of a person sticking to the taivas is the fact that it's a matter of survival. It's just a matter of survival.
Did that advantage the later?
The reason why they can't see it is because it's survival. It would interfere with their instinct of survival. Do you know what I mean? I'm talking about a case. What? You're not a philosopher. A real strict philosopher. He wasn't really, you know, if you look at his philosophy that he writes, it's not like simple homespun stuff, you know? Not really like a real category. You ever see your real stuff? Yeah, it's like not, this philosophy is very like plain. Yeah. But the guy didn't have any problem with the typhus. The man ran away from typhus. There's a man that really ran away from typhus. Why? Why should a man like that? Why should a man? He didn't do it as a shita. It was a natural thing to him because he had such enjoyment of the chasma. The enjoyment was so great, everything else seemed like nothing.
So then prove that it's moving towards
the now, the universe, the one equates it to.
You said that,
in terms of,
in terms of chasma,
what? They're both the same, what? The greatest philosopher, my friends, the greatest philosopher is only a human being. And no matter how great he is, he has instincts. He can't operate on new, a philosopher can't operate on new mechanisms. What?
Yeah, he operates on instincts. In this world, my friend, we all work on instincts. You can't change it. No,
you
look, my boss
said that
story.
Right.
But here, it's all instinct, no matter who it is, has to work on instincts.
You said that.
Now, why is it, if that's the case, why is it that most people don't find chachma? They should really find chachma, right?
Yeah, because you say the thing survival.
In other words, the question is, why do they constantly fool themselves with the taivas? They always keep on going up the ladder. The next thing is going to really make me happy. You see, the last thing didn't do it, right? 20,000, 50,000, 100,000, 1 million, 1.2 million, never going to end, you know what I mean? That's going to be the thing. And look at the guy that has the 1.2, he looks so happy, but no, I'll be the one.
I get there.
So the question is, I'm asking that, why the guy can't see the possibility of chachma? Wasn't that your question? An instinct is a very bad tool. Why is instinct a bad tool? Because an instinct is a dumb tool. It can't find any new inroads. The instinct only operates with what it has, with the given. Now, the given is that chachma is pain, because he's been raised in this society and he's been taught that knowledge is the painful thing that one does in order to achieve the real good, which is the financial, which is the money. You know what I mean? Now, he is therefore convinced that chachma per se is nothing, because he's been taught that all his life. So when he looks at his life and he looks at, what have I got to live for? Chachma, that's ridiculous. That's a pain. He's convinced that that's a pain. You know what I mean? Now, to be able to unravel, to be able to change his whole ideas, and be able to see that, one second, society made a mistake. This really is a great enjoyment. You know? That's already a different level of person. There are people that can do that. That's a high level already. That's a different individual, you know what I mean? Well, I'm telling you guys, philosopher already. Plus, see, for a guy to break...
It should be a natural thing.
For a guy to... No, it's not a natural thing. Because for a guy to break the premises, to change his premises that he's been taught, that requires a... you know what I mean? Guy has a... That's ready for philosopher.
That's back to my first question.
What's your first question?
Why
the guy's time is. It's a matter of survival. That's the thing I want to say. It's a matter of survival.
So why survive?
For what purpose? To survive? A person survives for one reason. You know why he survives? Because there's an instinct to survive. No other reason. There really is no word. If a person would not have the instinct, I maintain, I can't prove it really, but I would maintain that if you would remove that instinct of survival from people, that everyone commits suicide. Because if they look at their lives objectively and they look at the amount of pleasure and pain they have in their lives,
pain in this existence is much more.
It's
mostly fantasy that keeps the guy going. Fantasy. But you see, when people, the instinct of survival might press the pleasure into. That could be.
That's why a person should really never fear death. Because in death he loses the instinct of survival, in which case he wouldn't even choose the wife, so he'll be happier then. I talk the guy out of it. What usually happens is that them talking to him changes the framework, because he starts communicating with an outside thing. It changes the situation, changes the emotional situation. That itself is what pulls him out of it. It's not that they really convince the guy. A measure of psychic energy is being drawn off to them now. Now it's a new situation
that
he's in.
That's his fantasy. Then.
And once I said, in other words, the reason why I was committing suicide was under the impact of the balance that was facing him at that time. They changed the balance because they're draining off a lot of energy towards them. You know what I mean? You see? And now, right now, there's not enough psychic energy for the guy to jump anymore. If they wouldn't be there, then his energy would have to go towards the painful thing, you know?
To.
Right. And people represent also a certain amount of pleasure, because people, he's talking to somebody, a certain amount of satisfaction, you know, that he's communicating. It changes the situation.
That's what
Thompson.
But
once they get there, shouldn't he just go right back up again?
No.
You've got to get back to the way it is.
Gives him certain, it changes his whole frame. That's what changes the frame.
And also he thinks that people care about him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody
people care about him.
About him.
That's right.
The media.
Factions.
That
changed the balance.
The same.
That's right. Changes the whole balance. That's it. That's why the guy, like, he momentarily stops, he waits, you know? And the momentary waiting is when the thing has changed, you know? He doesn't have enough to go, he doesn't have enough to go there. I keep on working on it. Sometimes there's a wreck when I came around. They have in Philadelphia, with Bobby. They have about, I think, 47 failures of Abraham Lincoln. You know? People love that. They love it, you know?
Yeah.
They don't realize, though, that it is possible to have a person that has 47 failures and then have a success, right? But it is very possible a person to have 47 failures and then have a 48th one. You know, and they never have success.
Yeah, but they identify with the thing.
See, that brings identification. In other words, it's really a trick. Because they say the guy had 47 failures. Oh, and he had a big success, right? And I had 47 failures too, right? Well, then therefore I'm the same as him, so therefore the success is coming. You know what I mean?
Very well. That's what it is.
Okay. To the world if I got
That's the same thing, where the balance is really ridiculous. And that is found, that's what the Rambam says in the Machla Anushas. There's one area where a person can't be realistic. Almost impossible. And that is in assessing his own true value. Okay? His own true value, realistically.
That is underestimated.
Oh, yeah.
That's what the Rambam was saying.
A joke.
His own perpetuation of himself, his own existence.
You
know, I'm a breadwinner for a family. There's a whole world of people, you know, millions of people. I'm a breadwinner. Now, this becomes like, this is it. Like, it's like the most important guy in the world, the whole world. So now, the family becomes like the world, and he becomes the center of the family. He's the center of the world. You know what I mean?
I go to the world.
Yeah, you have a family, your aunts also have families, and also, you know, I mean, there's millions and millions. Yeah, so like this. Usually it goes like this. Well, I'm a breadwinner for the family, right? Okay, so it's a family, so what? So you have to make the family into the most important thing in the world. You know what I mean? Like, the family is the whole world. This is really, one person is the whole world, you know? So that's the world, see? Ask me in terms of the world, you know what I mean? Ask me in those terms.
Why
does it offer him?
Because the fantasy was much greater.
Why?
Let's say he says that.
Is a reality,
right.
But the enjoyment he thinks he's going to gain once he has that.
He has it.
Yeah, because now he has $1,000 a week. So what?
Right.
Do you know how many people in this world do not have any? It means he has no financial problems, right? Do you know how many people in this world do not have financial problems and are miserable?
Right.
So that's. But he's convinced that because anything that's good, he has to say this is going to give me the total satisfaction that I'm looking for.
Well,
so it takes
a
small
time,
thing.
A time slot.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be 6 weeks until he wins it, and also 6 weeks.
The other pain won't keep him. You know what I'm saying? There's two types of pain. There's a guy who can be in pain of anticipation. It could be a pain. You see? But this pain will keep him going because he's
the
expecting.
End.
Yeah. But once he reaches the end,
that's it.
Onto a certain reality, it doesn't come from the reality. It comes from the person's need for that satisfaction.
But doesn't
you
the,
way?
But the end result will be the reality.
Yeah, but I understand. But the reality. But the thing is, no, I guess. Let's say, for instance, the person says that if I have this, I'll be very happy, right? Which is something people say every day. Now the question is, what basis does he have to assume that if he has this, he's going to really be happy? What basis is there? Now, he thinks the basis is because he's really made an analysis of the situation and he's really seen that this situation will offer me X amount of pleasure. You see? That isn't true. The truth of the matter is, the reason why he thinks the situation is going to offer him pleasure is a trick of the mind. He projects onto the situation his needs. He needs a certain amount of satisfaction. Now, what he does is, when he sees any situation which has any enjoyment in it, you say, which has enjoyment in it, has to have something there to make it give it a basis, possibility. Immediately he projects his need for enjoyment onto that thing, and he says, this thing will offer me that need that I have. But the reason why he thinks it's going to offer it to him is not from the reality itself, it's from the projection of his own needs onto the reality.
Right.
Now, once he gets to the reality, that's it.
Yeah, but you can't do
you see?
Yeah,
but that's the reality. His conclusion is based on his own projections. The conclusion is not based on the reality itself.
That's total life. You get one thing, you go on to another thing. You get that, you go on to another.
That's right. That's total life. Now, it's total life only, it's true, it's total life. But it's total life as long as you don't realize that. Of course, if you realize that, then it's not going to be life anymore.
You know what I mean? Going to be happy.
See, you have to realize there's another trick over there. If he keeps getting it, right? But the thing is a man really happy? Look at what happens. During the time when he doesn't have what he wants, he's unhappy because he doesn't have what he wants. And when he gets it, then he's unhappy again. So it's a life of pain, really. The only thing is the guy can't quit because he thinks the survival keeps him alive.
See, it doesn't happen. That's right.
So either time, it's a life of pain.
Is this
you're not a big businessman, right?
Right.
Now, a big businessman is a guy that is always enjoys the fact. What does he enjoy the fact in business? That he is a big businessman. That's the enjoyment. It's not the money anymore, you know?
That's the idea.
Now, you must say the man is in pain. Why must I say the man is in pain? Because the man does not do the actions and the performances that he does all day because he really enjoys them. They're only a means to be the big businessman.
Oh, he has to
right?
keep up with his thing.
Which means the man has to be involved in painful performances all the time.
Right.
In order to have this enjoyment of being the big businessman.
It's like you give the check to the school program.
Right?
So how do you know?
Which is just a fantasy.
It's like you give the check to the school.
Real life is real.
How do you know it's not harmful for a guy?
Now, there's an instinct for money. You see, not a real direct instinct for money, but an instinct for pleasure, and money is like a condensed pleasure.
What's
right?
the habit? Yeah.
And concentrated pleasure. And portable condensed pleasure. And then there's an instinct for ego, but there's no instinct for business deals. I mean, what kind of an instinct is that?
Well,
it has to be something.
Is that he has to keep up with
a big businessman be totally happy? You know?
Totally happy.
Totally happy.
In other words, life is full
happiness. Life full happiness. Full pleasure. So I said, no, because the guy is doing it for the ego of being a great businessman, right? That means that what he's doing he doesn't really enjoy. He just does that in order to have this ego, right? Oh, so therefore what he's doing is pain. So the man must be involved in a modicum and a certain amount of pain, a logical. A lot of these guys always get disgusted. I can't. Guys always have these problems and they're nervous and high strung. Why do you think it is that way? I mean, in reality, why do you think these big businessmen are nervous and high-strung and under pressure? I mean, the reason is because these are all the pains that they're going through in order to have this fantasy.
The guy who went to Yeshiva University.
So, the question is that an enjoyment in fantasy, maybe somebody will argue that it's true that the guy has a fantasy that he's a great person because he's a businessman. It's not true. But we asked, is it possible to say that, who cares if it's not true? But the point is the guy still enjoys this. Right? He enjoys his fantasy.
Right.
Right? Ah. So we thought, I guess, there's one thing, however. We said, we mentioned the case of Alexander the Great and Diogenes, you know, where you tell them, you came to me and said, what do you want? Well, I'll give you everything. He said, just move out of the way, blocking the sun.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, the thing is, that's really the destruction of Alexander the Great. See, why destroy the guy? Why? Because the guy has to maintain that these things really have tremendous value.
Right.
See? Now the thing is, when he hears somebody say that, it kills him. Because why does it kill him? It kills him not because the guy shed a new light on something. Like, you know, the guy's reaction wouldn't be, what do you mean, move out of the way, I'm blocking this out, what kind of a thing, you know? He understood it right away. Because he felt it was a blow. Now, why does the guy feel it's a blow? Because underneath, he's always sensed that maybe there's nothing here in reality. See, there's a reality principle in every individual. A person has a reality principle. Reality principle means a person has a certain part of his mind. The difference between a man and an animal is that an animal, they make these tests with animals, and they show the animals can think, and the animals, and they try to equate them to humans, you know? But there's one difference. The wheel of reality in an animal is totally subservient to the wheel of instinct. But in man, it runs free. It spins free.
See? And it doesn't necessarily follow the instinct. He starts, he thinks about his death. He thinks about disease. These are against the animal worries about a thing like that. But the only time the thought process works in an animal is only if it's going to serve as a means for the instinct. The moment there's no means, it doesn't work anymore. I can turn it off. It goes off. But a man, he can't turn it off. You see? So it keeps rolling. Now what happens is that when a guy has this thing where he claims a tremendous fantasy, tremendous enjoyment, but underneath it all, that other wheel is still working. One second, is this really great? I mean, what's so great about this? See, but he has to keep pushing it down. He has to keep pushing it down. That's why when he sees somebody that says it's worthless, it kills him, because he knows that he can't, has no basis in reality to justify it. You know what I mean? So therefore, that's another reason why if a guy is in the world of fantasy, if he enjoys the fantasies, so then he's in conflict with himself insofar as his reality principle is concerned. See, so really he's doubly unhappy, because in one sense he has to do actions which cause him pain in order to have this fantasy. And the fantasy itself, he knows underneath it all that really his reality principle always is telling him that there's nothing here. See?
Right.
And you see the people say, what is this all? It's all nothing. That's not something. Because he can't take the, you know what I mean? But that is a constant thing. I mean, the dynamics of the mind, you can't just push down the thing and just say it's not there. It's always there eating away, but it's under control to a certain degree. Now, a certain amount of energy has to be expended in control, maintaining that control. See? So a person who has an enjoyment of fantasy really always has this thing in the... moving up. Yeah?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I told that kid one time. There's one guy in teaching a class once, that is really is a class of rough kids, really. These kids, I mean, just, I couldn't, like, there's one or two kids in the class I could reach. The other kids, they were totally steep in the typhus. I've never seen a group like this. Completely in the typhus.
Where was this? Where was this?
The guy wrote, nothing. You know? Had no way to reach them. The mind was already completely, it was a very wealthy kid. His father was a multi-millionaire. And his father gave a tremendous donation to the school. So the school naturally gave him straight A's, and the guy never showed you like a free run. I never saw anything like this. The guy had a free run to school. He'd come in, you know, and he'd, like, the first day he comes to my class, he's, how you doing? Like, I see that guy's a whole boss over here. Stop talking. I'm right in the middle of a sentence. He says, well, I have to go now. Walks out of the room. I try to talk to him. It was really sort of like an experiment. I wanted to see can I reach this guy? Try this, try that. One time I got him. I asked him I said, what do you want to be in life? So he says he wants to be a great businessman like his father, you know? So I said, tell me, do you want to be happy in life? He said, yes. I said, now let me ask you one more question. Is a great businessman a man that just sits back and is idle, or is he a man that's always striving for new goals? He says, always striving for something new. So I said, now insofar as you're striving, you're unhappy with what you have now? And therefore, what you want to be is an unhappy man.
Right.
Yamas Avram b'seva teva zokein v'soveya. That means he's not waiting for anything new to happen. No new striving. See?
That's very good.
That's what does God want from you? Kim li yiras ad Hashem alekach la'avoy yisoy la'leches b'drachav la'davkavoy. You know? Lagabe Moshe, most of Israel. He could see it, but it's not reality.
But isn't that by everything, though?
And everything, you know, we still feel the... it's not on the same level as a person who doesn't see it. It's a different level already, the point is, it's subject to variation degree. Insofar as you're attached to the instinctual life, that's why it works. Variation degree.
Doesn't that apply to everything? Even in learning, you like it.
Ultimately, when he's in learning, shouldn't desire to gain any more. It should be a natural thing. That the reason why he learns is because he just loves to do this. He loves to do this action. You see? That's the reason why he learns. Nothing more, not because he intends to be a gadol, or he intends to gain more, put down another mesachta, this, that, you know? That's really not, that's low lishma. Real lishma is the way the Rishonim learned, you know, just like breathing.
Right.
Like, this is living.
Right?
You have to start off. You have to start off with, I think, your Rosh Lanta says something, it's true. He says, Mitesh Lolishma Balishma. He says, but in the beginning it's got to be Lolishma. That's what he says. Because in the beginning, what gets a guy to want to learn? You know, he wants to, He wants to, he sees this as a great thing, and he wants to get that great thing. Now, that's already low lishma, because he wants to get the great thing. The real lishma is where it's a natural process.
Right.
He can't take him away from the Gemara. The guy's mind is naturally, this is the greatest thing. You know what I mean? In the beginning, it's, I want to achieve something. And a desire for achievement, it has to start off that way, because there's no other way that can get him there. What is going to start? He's not in it, right? Since he's not in it, he can't learn lishma. Now, what's going to get him there? So he says, I want to achieve that. He must start off with some type of some type of an achievement. Some type of sense of achievement. That's good, though. If you have that, it's good to have that. And the, but then in the end, it should be converted to the other thing.
Well, I feel like we reached that point.
Knowledge. Otherwise, just an emotional experience at the moment, it goes away. How many people go?
It always works.
It does, and it hits his emotion. And he sees it. And he's back. He doesn't have any knowledge. Each person should say something better about the mace. You know? Basic forest. A lot of luckless say he can't do it.
What's that word?
Why? He said, Chazal say, beautiful thing. He said, because the mace him say, Mochar atoy mono.
Right.
That's
right.
That's it. Because it's the break of reality. See, the reality principle can't take principle can't take this because it's make fun of it. Make fun of it means to break the identification. All these things were given for that purpose.
Don't they know?
The whole world was made that way. The world was made that even though the guy has this tremendous instinct, an instinct for survival and everything, but God gave a person Nisa. Because if he wouldn't have Misa, he'd never have a chance to really achieve the true good. Misa is the thing that stops it. Misa, Chuli, Misa, all these things. Maybe he'll take Eitz from the Eitz Chayim. And Vacha Vachai Lodam. And they never achieve anything. They never be able to come to the truth. His time is already, he's in the times already. Even in mitzvahs, it still is a breach of identification.
No, I was always told all the souls out there.
How would you define freedom? What does freedom mean?
Yeah.
Mace. In other words, is a slave by external, you're saying?
A
slave by internal. Either, in other words, one way you're a slave because of external coercion, right? And the other way you're a slave because of your own emotions. What do you mean by your own emotion? When you say there's an internal slave, doesn't a slave by definition require a master? A slave is a relative. Without master, there's no such thing as slave. Right? Slave is a relative. That means that there must be the element of master must exist by slave. Then it would be difficult, if not impossible, to have one be a slave to oneself. Because we have to define the person as being both the master and the slave. And clearly, would be right. That internal slavery would be impossible. Because in order to be a slave, so there must be two different parts. One is the master. And that part works on the part that receives the recipient of the mastery, which is the slave, right? Now, a thing cannot be both the active and the recipient at the same time, right? It would be impossible for a hammer to hit itself. Hammer has to hit another object.
That's only if you claim that man has one part.
So let's use the term determined. But wouldn't you have the same thing that everybody would be determined? Everyone has the absence of freedom. Right? Okay, so then you'd really be in the same situation as we are now, right? Well, strange. Hey, myth. Freedom is really a myth. Night of Pesach. There's no real freedom. Or narrowly constrained, right? Or Ein Lach Ben Chayrin El Mishayis B'Tera. Chazal, what he mentioned. Say no, that it's not true. He's not any more Ben Chayrin than the Ben Chayrin is free person. He's not any more free person than anybody else. He has his limitations. His limitations might express themselves in the area of Torah, in the area of knowledge. And another person has his limitations in the area of
money-making or an area of prestige gaining or whatever it might be, the area of honor. But every person will be inherently limited, inherently constrained. I have difficulty in understanding what Chazal mean. I agree, it's a problem. It's a severe problem. It only means the freedom from specific. Okay. All right. That you couldn't interpret that way, because that would seem to mean that there is that everybody, every other pursuit, inherently carries with it the concept of restraint or coercion. Of course, if you're speaking each area is limited to its area. That wouldn't make sense to say that in the area of Torah, so you don't have any restraints in knowledge. Sure, we have restraints in knowledge in the area of brick building. You don't have any restraints in the knowledge of brick building. There are different areas. Every area naturally has to be dealt with in its own way, and every area will have its own restraint. But why should I pick Torah more than any other area? Every area will have its limitations. Of course, in its area, it's unrestrained. But that's true about any area.
Right.
In this area. So if Torah is knowledge, so it's unrestrained in knowledge. And the other area is unrestrained in its field.
I think we have an infantile...
...of that, because take free will. Free will means the ability to choose the good, right? But the Rambam says that we mentioned this a few times, that the highest level is where the person wants the good.
And that's his freedom.
Ah, hold on a second. But the moment, let's say the person reaches perfection, and he reaches the life where he really wants the good, and he sees it, and it's rational. So the man is not going to be a fool. He's not going to leave that which he knows is good. And he really sees that this is the good for himself. Nobody's going to be an idiot and leave that, right? So he definitely is going to take that good, right? So then he has lost his free will, because he doesn't have the freedom anymore to decide. He naturally will take this. So I think that free will would lead to a lack of freedom. He wanted to say that free will is tied in with freedom. Well, it seems on the contrary. That free will lead you away from freedom. With free will, you're not going to, you'll reach a certain level of perfection. And that's it. You'll naturally go to the good. I agree. That's what reminds me. Rambam mentioned last week. Rambam says that a person who runs after the good, he says he gets a taifa, misava. Misava for the good, and he keeps on running after it. Right? That's the same thing. A person who runs after taifas also gets the same taifa and runs after the taifas. Right? Except he doesn't have to work so hard. So so it would seem that in either case, the man is running after something which is drawing him, which is pulling him. Right? So in either case, either one is certainly not as free. Because internal, opposite, and you can't be a slave to yourself. That was the question when we started going that path, but then suddenly, I don't know how, we slipped back to the other point. But that was the first approach that we saw. We said, you cannot be a slave to yourself. Because slavery, a person is a slave, that means that there must be somebody else who is a master. Right? Who is a master. Now, then you mentioned, that's how it went. Then you mentioned that you don't have to have the element of a master. It's just a limitation. Right. So lack of freedom means a limitation. If lack of freedom means a limitation, then everybody's limited. That's what I got into that. Torah is any freer than anybody else. Am I right? What is the ability to live the best life? Sure. You could say that, you could take any term and say that. You could say virtue is the ability to live the best life, right? You could say chesed is the ability to live the best life. You could say anything about it. You could take any term and say that. But what we have to understand is why is that, what does that have to do with the term itself? Where in the best life lies the element of freedom? equal amount of rights, more or less. And that is really not a good thing. Because there are some people that rights could be harmful to. Simple example would be, if a child would have free rights, he'd destroy himself. So you see that a person, that an individual, a child, has to be controlled. Otherwise, he could harm himself. He can physically kill himself. Right.
So therefore, the argument is that the same thing. There are many grown-ups who are really on the level of children, and freedom for them is harmful. It's a good argument. Very good argument. It's not one that would be readily accepted today, but the argument nevertheless is a good one. So those people really would do best if they had others who were in control and told them what to do. Right. That was in terms of the amount of the slacheris, like he mentioned before. But when the Gemara says that ein loch ben chorin el misha osik b'Torah, you know what that means? That there is no such thing as a free person. There is no free man other than he who spends his days learning. Right? Now this is a different thing already. This you can't say it's speaking about the freedom of religion, because it's like saying a person doesn't have religious freedom unless he's religious all day. Well, naturally, if he's religious all the time, so he must have religious freedom. How else could he do it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There would be no purpose in the state. So it must mean something else. It must mean that he who learns Torah really has a certain quality of freedom. It doesn't mean that he's not keeping the mitzvahs, but it's not enough if the person just... let's say, for instance, a person's in a situation where the situation is such, you can't learn Torah, but he fulfills all the Torah at that time, so he's potter, can't do it, right? He would not be considered ben chorin. He might be doing the right thing, because at that time he can't learn. It's a war time, and there's no ability for the man to learn. But he keeps every other mitzvah he can, so he's living according to the Torah 100%. But still, you wouldn't say he's a free man. That's not his argument. So therefore, so you see, it's not just the living according to the Torah, but it must be through Talmud Torah. You're free to act out of anything. You're free to act out of emotion. Emotions. Every year, you will carry with it its own specific freedom. So why mention that this freedom is greater than that freedom? They're all freedoms. I mean, why single this one out as having the quality of freedom? It's truth, so what? Truth is not freedom. So one is truth. Ein loch ish emes. Now let me show you the Torah. Without knowledge, your choices are limited. Without knowledge, your choices are limited. Because without knowledge, you don't know which you don't know the other possibilities, right?
Also, why not say that without knowledge?
One second. Let's say without knowledge, you have possibility A, B, C, D. Right? But now when you gain knowledge, you find out that there's EFG. Right? So but the point is that you want to say that that freedom means the highest attainable freedom possible. It doesn't mean beyond the inherent limitations that we used before. It's not beyond the inherent limitations. Of course, everything is inherently limited. Right? Except God. But insofar as the utmost possible reduction of limitation. What? I would say that the point is not Ein loch ben chorin el misha osik b'Torah. Means Ein loch ben chorin el misha osik b'Torah means one thing. It means that the man who has achieved the highest range,
quantity.
Is that what we're saying?
Quality of freedom.
Right. Well, highest quantity of freedom attainable. Attainable. She's saying within the realm of the attainable. Right. Right?
Yeah.
That's what increasing his options, yes? What do you say? Is that it doesn't have to do with freedom, but it has to do with living a superior life. Isn't that what you're going to have to come down to? In other words, you're saying that it's not the amount of options, because he showed that the amount of options are reduced. On the contrary, now your options are only Torah. Before you had many more options. So you'll say it's true that I had that I have less options. But I could do something which is better. Right? So then what you're saying is that this is the better life.
Yeah.
Right? But it doesn't have to do with the concept. What does that have to do with the concept of freedom?
Right. Again, we divert back to the original question.
It's good, it's better. But where is the common denominator between the better and free? You'll finally say free isn't a value really. Free might not be a value. Yes. Two different things.
But what's the idea?
Still, I mean, I have an idea of freedom, right? Now, this idea of freedom doesn't seem to fit in with the... I wouldn't call it freedom. I would say that, you're right, fulfilling your potential whatever it is, living your utmost. But why is that called freedom? It seems on the contrary to contradict what the idea of freedom is. Freedom is equal to a slave. Now, what's the function of the slave? What is the function of the slave? Really, in reality, let's say, for instance, plain Egypt, the triumph. They took people and they enslaved them. What does slavery mean? Work, serve,
help
okay.
The master.
Help the master. So that by definition, what is a slave really? What is a slave?
Means.
The slave is a means to the master's
will.
Existence. Right?
Whatever.
In other words, he doesn't exist for himself. Isn't that correct? He exists for his master. That's why the Egyptians used to kill the slaves when they buried the master. Very rational. Because the whole purpose of the slave is for the master. Now the master's dead, so there's no more purpose. All right. So the definition of a slave really is that an individual doesn't exist for himself. He exists for somebody else. Right? Okay. Now, let me ask you like this. What about insofar as actions are concerned? You have an individual, and he performs certain actions. Would you say that certain actions that he performs could be termed as slave actions, and certain actions that he performs could be termed as free actions?
For himself, it's the free actions. For his master.
Possible with this, if you only have a self, that you should also be able to divide certain things that a person does in his lifetime between slavery and between freedom. By the same definition.
Yeah.
A person who does something for another purpose, that action exists only for the purpose of another action. Right? So the action that he does really is only a means to something else. Then that action would be termed a slave action, an action of slavery. Just like the slave exists only for his master, so too this action exists only for the purpose of another action. I'll give you an example. A person works all week in order that he should be able to go play tennis on Sunday. Right? So now all week when he works, is that really a free action? Is the name really involved in the free action? No, not a free action. Why isn't it a free action? Because the action only serves one purpose. What is the purpose?
That's right.
But now, when the man plays tennis, this is a free action. Why? Because all the other actions were done only for the purpose of this action. Correct? Okay. Right? So far, we didn't see any difference, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's make the transition. Now, the Chazal say like this. That the only free person is a person who is involved in Talmud Torah. Osek in Talmud Torah. Why would you say that? Why would you say that? It's not just what a person might think is free. Let's say, for instance, a person is involved in actions which really only, their very nature is only to serve a purpose. But he thinks that these actions are really an end in themselves. Would you say he is doing a free action, or is he doing a slave action?
Slave.
Right?
Reward at the end.
You see, the problem with our definition before was we were looking at it in terms of psychology. Psychologically, we were looking at it. We were looking at the definition of slavery. Let's say, for instance, a person is a slave, right? Let's say, for instance, a person is a slave in Mitzrayim, but the man happens to think that he's free. Would that make him really free? No, in reality, his existence only serves one purpose. You understand? His existence only serves the purpose of his master. That's it. What he thinks, or his, if he misconstrues the reality of it, that doesn't really make him free. It's just something, it's a mistake in his mind. Correct? Similarly, if a person does an action which inherently, according to the laws of nature, is defined as an action which is a means, right? And he thinks that it's an action which is really an end in itself, which is a free action, he is mistaken. The nature of the action isn't mistaken. Right? Okay. So what Chazal say is as follows. that since the only purpose, the only action which was really meant as an end in itself, the only real action which every other action serves is the action of Talmud Torah. Since man was created really for the purpose, this is man's nature is such that his only fulfillment is through Talmud Torah, right, through knowledge. So it turns out that every other action in the world that a person does is only a means for this action, which is really an expression of his true nature. Correct? Now, since that is the case, since the purpose of an individual's existence is to act in accordance, to do certain activities which are in accordance with his nature, I think that can't be denied, right? That's the purpose of a person's existence, to do certain activities which are totally in accordance with his nature. Now, an animal has a certain nature, and all the activities that it does in accordance with its own nature, that's an expression of its being. That would be the best life. It would be a free life for the animal. You see, because this would be the fulfillment of what its nature is. Once you fulfill a thing's nature, you can't speak of constraint anymore. See, constraint is only if you prevent something from fulfilling its nature. If, for instance, if you take a dog, and the dog is supposed to go, its nature demands that it's supposed to play, and you pull it back, so then you're constraining it. But if the dog lives in accordance with its own nature, you can't speak of any constraint. That's its nature. Its inherent limitations is not a constraint, because the inherent limitations are part of its nature. Something which is part of its nature, that's the way it's supposed to be. The limitation of freedom is only insofar as you take away something which the nature of the thing dictates. You understand? The thing has a certain nature. It demands certain requirements. Now, if you take that away, you're removing its freedom. But if it's living in accordance with its way, with its purpose, and the way it's meant to be, then there's no constraint. You follow? Oh. Similar over here. Since the truth of the matter is that the purpose of a person's existence, the activity which is most natural, which man was created for, is the intellectual, right? Now, any other action that a man does in his life is only what? Is only a means for this. So every other action really is just an action of slavery, because it only exists for the purpose of this other action. Now, this action itself is inherently not limited. Why? Because it is that action which, you see, it's that action which is in accordance with the nature of the human being. So you can't speak of constraint if it's in accordance with its nature. See, constraint is only when you prevent something from achieving its nature. Right?
It's like saying that this circle. It's like saying that this circle is limited in its circleness so far.
Is in Loch Ben Chorin Mishas Batara the definition of freedom? What's the definition of freedom? See, freedom. The definition of freedom is that which exists for itself. That which exists for itself, for its own right. That's why we call the Egyptians considered themselves free, and the Bnei Israel they considered to be avodim. Why? Because at that time the existence of the Bnei Israel, insofar as they could see, served only one function: the function of making the Egyptians wealthy, making them have what they want. Correct? Right? That was according to their concepts. Do you understand what I mean? But the truth of the matter is that we have to deal not in accordance with the way people see things, but in accordance with the way the reality is. Now, in accordance with the reality, it turns out that an individual, even if he thinks he's free, he might not necessarily be free. Why? Because if he's involving himself in actions which are meant, which inherent in their nature, there's only one purpose in those actions, and that is to serve another action. And he doesn't involve himself in that other action, it turns out that he spends his whole life in slavery. The only individual who will spend his life in freedom would be an individual who involves himself in those activities, which are activities for him insofar as they're really a part of his nature. But if he does activities which are not a part of his nature, which are only there for the purpose of him doing it, of him achieving his nature, and he never achieves that nature, then he's involved in slavery all his life. It's not like this. That it turns out like this. For instance, a person plays tennis. Now, a person relaxes, he plays tennis. Now, the purpose of any activity is only so that he should be able to perform, so he should be able to do the ultimate performance, which is a part of his nature. But if he involves himself in that activity, as an end, and he never gets to do the other activity. It turns out that insofar as his nature is concerned, he only did an action which is supposed to serve his nature, but he never really served his nature. You understand what I mean? He did. If I talk about limitation, limitation doesn't mean the absence of freedom. Everything is limited. It depends on the nature of the limitation. If the limitation is one due to its own nature, so then that's not an absence of freedom. That's the way the thing is. That's the nature of the thing. If the limitation is something which is not due to its own nature, but something is preventing it from achieving its ultimate, that's considered coercion. That's considered slavery. You follow?
Like the dog.
Right. The death of slavery is when an individual is prevented from achieving that which naturally he should achieve. But if his nature is such that it involves limitations, that's not a lie. That's not a lack of freedom. You see? Because that's the nature of the thing. The thing cannot expect to be more than its own nature dictates. That's the nature of the thing. How can the thing be more than that which it is? See? The only time you have an infringement on the existence of the thing is where within its nature is that it should be such. But then you prevent it. Then that's coercion. But if that's the nature of the thing, so that's it. An animal is free. An animal is free as long as you don't impinge upon its nature. See, the moment if you allow a fox to live in the woods the way it's supposed to, so then it's free. But if you take it and you prevent it from living in accordance with its nature, then you have an infringement on its freedom, on its life. Yes? He asked the question, he asked one question. He says, why is it only a person who is, only if it's only Torah, but mitzvos, really not. Let's say a person is living in a situation where he can't learn Torah. He's putter from the Torah. It's true, he may be putter from the Torah, but you could never say a man is putter from his nature. You see? You could say he's putter, he can't help himself, he's not chayev. But his nature still is there, and he still is not being allowed to fulfill his nature, which is the purpose of his nature. So that a person in a situation where he can't learn Torah and he's putter, true, he's putter. But the fact remains he isn't a free man because he's still not involving himself in that action which his nature demands to be involved in. So he has an infringement on his nature. You understand what I mean? The absence of freedom is when you have an infringement on your nature. Now, if you are living in accordance with the ultimate that your nature allows, that your nature was meant to be, then there's no infringement anymore. Except in the fact that you are what you are. That's not an infringement. That's what you are. You can't be anything else. Not really something which is meant for another purpose. But it's meant for its own sake. So in that situation, you're free. But mitzvahs, really, the purpose of mitzvahs are as a means for lima Torah. That's really what it means. That's why the Gemara says that a person who is oisik b'Torah, like Shimon Yechoy v'Chavera, is Torah and Rashi's Pater from all the mitzvahs. That's the ultimate, and that's why he's not also. Definition of
freedom. That's what freedom is.
See, freedom here, what? Where do you have constraints? You only have constraint when something is preventing you from being what your nature dictates it should be. That's what constraint means. Now, therefore, the absence of constraint is when you're living in accordance with what your nature dictates, the way your nature dictates you should live. If you're living in accordance with that, then there's no restraint. Restraint means when you're prevented from living that way. And that's why it's an Elof Macham Rishon. Eved Lomo, when it says that a person should be an Eved, you see, what does it mean? I would say the plain shot in the Pasuk means Eved over there is referring to the definition of Eved, which we mentioned before. Not insofar as he himself is concerned, but insofar as his existence will only serve one purpose, the purpose of others. That's what it means, really. Yichanan Eved Lomo means that his existence serves. Now, the question is, why should it be that way, right? Why should it be that way? Apparently, that is the best thing for that individual at that time. Whether it means he's living in accordance with his nature is a separate question. Because it could be he's not living in accordance with his nature. But it could be that there's no other choice. For instance, let's say a person who should really be a free individual. But if you allow him freedom to be what he's supposed to be, on the contrary, he will follow another path. He'll do something more harmful, worse. So then you have to hold him back. This person could never really achieve that purpose. The question, what you're asking is, is Kenar when he's an Eved Lomo, when he's an Eved to when he's an Eved to others, is that his nature? That he should be an Eved like a beast of burden? That's its nature? You see? Or no. Really, his nature is something else. But there's no way that we can ever allow him to achieve that nature, because the moment we release him, he's going to go in the wrong direction. See? I would say that according to the Torah, it would appear that it doesn't mean that that's his nature. Because every human being has a Tzelem Elokim. And since every human being has a Tzelem Elokim, so his nature is, he must fulfill his nature as such that if he's living in accordance with that Tzelem Elokim, then he's living according to his nature. But it's certain people, we can't allow them the ability to ever reach that, because they're so far away from reaching it that the moment we give them the ability, they'll use the ability in the wrong direction, so we have to stop them. You know what I mean? But not necessarily that his nature, he's reduced from the stature of a human being.
But the Torah accepts a person to be slave.
Right? So therefore he's not really doing the right thing. So his nature really is such that he should be a free individual. But he is not living in a
culture. So the Torah accepts to go against his nature?
No, it's accepted to go against nature, but when there's the Torah gives a leeway, when a person can't do the ultimate, so it says, okay, then let him do the second best thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that every situation in the Torah is the best. I'll give you a good example. The example of Yifas Torah by Mochama, right? The person, that you're going into war, and it's mutter for a person to marry a Goya. Right? First be his mutter, and then he takes her back to the house. So the chazal said right away, la duba Torah, la kenege yitzhar. Does that mean it's the best thing for the person to do that? No, but we have to know where you cannot achieve the best possibilities. So it says, well, then we have to still act with rationality and achieve that which is the best of all the possibilities that exist. You know what I mean? So really, an Eved definitely isn't the best. There's no such thing as an Eved being, and that's his nature. Because on the contrary, it says that's why Verotah Dovah says in the Bar Matzeah, to show that he's doing the wrong thing, really.